welcome to the Minnesota Beer Cast. I am Drew. That's my co-host, Schmitty.
That's me.
What's happening, buddy?
Oh, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
We are, of course, presented, sponsored by our friends over at Free House Beer.
Yes, we are. They've got a multitude of fine spots around town, and we're going to be at one next week.
Yes. My phone just locked up on me. I had it open in front of me, and then my screen went black. So hang on a second.
We're going to be at
the Three Squares in Maple Grove. That's
yes,
right.
We are. So
on the 19th, time is still TBD, but probably around like 5:30 or something like that.
Yeah.
We'll be there recording a show. They've got an event going on where they're going to have tons of, eight different beers, all stouts, one porter. Doing a thing with Bells on the 19th, so that's gonna be a lot of fun.
Gonna be some tasty beer. Gonna be a good time.
Yep.
Come say hi. Come buy me a beer. Come grab the show.
Don't buy him a beer.
What?
We get
me two beers.
We get free beer.
Shh. Don't spoil it. Don't spoil it.
They always like give us a couple beers while we're there. It's fine.
Yeah.
Don't buy Schmitty a beer. If you're buying anybody a beer, buy me a beer. I do all the work.
All right.
I'm over there slaving away behind all our recording equipment.
Yeah. Yeah. You're playing solitaire.
Oh, hang on. That reminds me.
Oh, is it your turn?
It's my turn.
All right. All right. Let's get this show started. We've got some great guests. We've got Tom from Indeed, and we've got Jim from Sociable. How are you guys doing?
Good. Great. I'd say the greatest guests.
Right? The best guests this week.
Yeah, this is the only time you do this show at once a year, right?
Exactly.
The best two guests on the show today, without a doubt. Fantastic.
Welcome back to the show, both of you. What brings you in, Tom?
Well, you called.
I guess it's me.
The invitation that you sent me.
It showed up in my calendar and the address was there. And so I got lots of things to talk about.
Yeah.
It's probably been a little while.
That's why I called. Yeah. You have lots of stuff to talk about. You know who has a bunch of news to share? Tom does.
Yeah.
So you've got some awards you guys won. Mm-hmm. You've got some beer. Of course, that goes along with those awards. Let's start there. Let's talk about your B-Side Pils.
Yeah. B-Side Pils is it's a kind of a German-style Pilsner that we've been making for a number of years now. And it's one of my favorite beers that we make. I just actually had one in the tap room before I came here. And
you're drinking one now, it looks like.
Yeah, I got one. Yeah, that just happens, I guess. But yeah, we've been entering this European Beer Star Award over in Europe and Germany. And last year we won an award for Mexican Honey, which was a lot of fun.
I love that beer.
In the honey category. And this year, you know, we were like, you usually don't win multiple awards years in a row or whatever. You know, a little American brewery like us, especially in Europe. And this is the biggest, you know, award you can get in Europe is the Beer Star Award. And we entered B-Side into the Keller Pils category, which is a very German category. And, you know how the Germans are about their beer,
mm-hmm.
and we won a bronze. And so we were already going to be over there for this basically trade show, Brau Belviel. I can't even say it. It's basically in German, and we won this award, so we were able to go pick it up. And I was a little worried the entire time, because if you look back in like the history of this category, it's just like German brewery, German brewery, German brewery, German brewery. Like maybe an Italian mixed in, like a kind of a Bavarian Italian.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, are we going to get like knifed in the train station? You know, because like there's not that many American breweries that win in this competition, which is, you know, kind of an honor for us to experience that. And especially 2 years in a row. And it was B-Side, which is a beer that, you know, is a beer that I love to drink. And I think, you know, craft pilsners aren't maybe quite as popular in the American market as I'd like them to be. I think the people are still struggle with the $9.99 six pack of craft pilsner.
Mm-hmm.
But they're delicious beers to drink, and like B-Side in particular does really well in bars for us. I think people at the lower kind of investment feel in a pilsner going with their food, it goes well, and B-Side's one of those beers. So that was a lot of fun. Yeah, Germany was always great. So
when you crafted B-Side Pils, was it designed to kind of emulate that traditional German pils, or was it? There's the American kind of twist, yeah, over hopped, you know, I call it an American twist and put too many hops in it kind of thing that happens in the craft beer world, right? It was this kind of always been the idea to have a traditional German style pils, and did that work out to your advantage?
I think it was kind of two-thirds of it we sort of thought was going to be traditional German, and if I've had a lot of Germans drink this beer, mm-hmm. and most of them say, well, there's too many hops. there's too many hops. This is not possible. You know, and but I don't think it's terribly too hoppy, but apparently the people who gave us the award didn't either. And so, yeah, I mean, it's all German ingredients. It's German malt. It's German hops. One of the hops in there, Mandarin of Bavaria, is a newer variety. Mm-hmm. So it gives it a little bit of a more of a modern twist in it. It's you know, it's bitter for the American craft beer palate, I think, but it's not too far. So we have one brewer that works at our brewery, Dan Stavig, who originally worked at Shell's.
Yeah.
And he's got a real German bent to him. And so it was a real fun for him to win the award. And I think he took a lot of pride in it. And he's really put a lot of effort into this beer in particular. So yeah, I guess it's a acceptable German example at this point, but it is, I think it's distinctly American too. So
good. Well, congrats to you and congrats Thanks. To Dan and all his hard work. Why don't you pass me another one of these things? Because I already drained.
Yeah,
the port earlier.
It's a nice smooth drink. It's a fantastic beer.
Thanks yeah, a lot. And, you know, if you come to our tap room too, we have another version of it, which is the Zwickel. Zwickel beer is a beer that's pulled straight from the tank before filtration, or in our case, centrifuge. And it's got suspended yeast in it, and we serve it in this traditional German ceramic stein. And you can really only get it at Indeed at the brewery too, so at the tap room there in Northeast. So it's kind of a fun thing too, and it's amazing how much the beer is different when it hasn't been, you know, clarified. Basically,
is that your way of like doing a legit version of the hazy beer thing?
it's Indeed's version of a hazy beer, like hazy pilsner. Yeah. I was like, maybe we should just make the whole thing hazy and it'll sell.
dude, you got to put some milkshake in there for it to really rip.
Milkshake pills,
maybe.
I like that.
We've started to kind of come around to this idea of never say no to anything. Yeah, but
I think we made it to 6 days, 23 hours before we mentioned
a hazy joke.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. I mean, Tom kind of queued us up on that one. I had to go for it, right?
No, yeah. It's the cliche that will never die.
Yeah.
Well, we've never made one, and honestly, it comes up in every meeting we have.
Yeah. Well, is there market demand for it? I mean, do you hear from consumers, you know, indeed, where is your hazy IPA.
Yeah, we do. Not for so much for consumers, but from customers like bars and mm-hmm. restaurants, just because they've been on a tear sales-wise. Mm-hmm. And we haven't not made one because we don't necessarily think that the style can be good. We've had a lot of bad examples of the style. I've drank a lot of really bad examples of it that mm-hmm. I don't think were very good. But I've also had some that I was like, wow, this is really good. And I think we've gone through a little bit of a transition as a company where, as a brewery, where we were like, oh, we're never going to do that because we've worked so hard to make our beer so clear and everything. And we'll talk a little bit about Milwaukee in a second, but
yeah.
That's another part of it, is that when you make beer at Indeed, we make it a lot of it at a time. And we were looking for ways to kind of become more nimble and more innovative. And mm-hmm. that's something that's factored into kind of our new venture that we're going to talk about later or whenever. So,
yeah. You know, that was kind of one of the questions I wanted to ask is how things change and evolve over time. You know, I have the advantage of knowing a lot of people who have started breweries or who have wanted to start breweries and go from that idealistic dreamer of, well, I'm going to open a brewery. It's going to be real small, but I'm only going to brew what I want to brew and what the real craft beer nerds like. And then, you know, you talk to them 5 years later when there's bags under their eyes and they've got, you know, they're just exhausted and they've got a business to run and like, well, you know, the craft lagers are running really good right now. And, you know, I'm not really doing so many of the sours like I wanted to do when I was brewing beer in my garage. Is that just a reality of running a business, is that you have to kind of respond to that market demand sometimes versus what the idealistic vision might have been when, you know, you were sitting around planning things around a homebrew
game? Yeah, I think absolutely. I think that there's room for having some principles. Absolutely. You should have them as a business, as a brewery. But I don't think those principles should box you into only making certain styles of beer. And I'm always very skeptical of people who start breweries and say, we're only going to make this, we're only mm-hmm. going to make that. I just think that you're going to engage with your customers and your consumers, like you should be listening to them. And I think you need to leave part of your story sort of unwritten. Mm-hmm. When you start, and I've seen people, I think, struggle because they've tried to just box themselves into certain things. You know, if I showed you our business plan from when we started, you'd just laugh. I
mean, right.
It's totally different. There's nothing, anything like we've ever imagined. Part of that, I think, is because we've been flexible, and we've tried to grow and evolve.
Yeah.
You know,
it seems like a good way to write a business plan is to have one that allows you to adjust, because unless you are the great Swami, you're not going to know what the future is going to bring.
Right? Totally. The original business plan was like 150 pages long at Indeed. It was way too long. I just wrote one for this Wisconsin venture thing, and it's like 8 pages long.
Let's tease it right there.
Yeah.
Let's come back after this break and talk about the Wisconsin venture. You're listening to the Minnesota Beercast on AM 1130 and 103.5.
Rosie here. I want to take a minute to brag about my friends at Blue Plate. November 5th through the 15th, they are participating in Eat to the Max, their 10-day version of Give to the Max, benefiting nonprofit People Serving People, a local organization dedicated to ending homelessness. Consider visiting their restaurants November 5th through the 15th and to make a donation, which Steph Schimp and the great folks at Blue Plate will match, up to $10,000. Blue Plate restaurants have raised over $75,000 for People Serving People. Stop by one of their 8 restaurants and eat to the max.
Fam.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Beercast, presented by Free House Beer. We are in the midst of a conversation with Tom from Indeed, talking about the changing nature of running a brewery and how flexible you have to be. You mentioned before we went to break about how you've been flexible, you've been open to change, you've been open to new ideas. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? Like, what are some of the things that were in your original vision and business plan that you had to adjust or shift away from?
Yeah, I mean, a big thing I think was just size and rate of growth. When we started, we thought it was gonna take a long time to get to the size that we're at. But the market change and just the business dynamics change, where it was like, well, it was really a good motivation to get some market share before all these 7,000 other breweries opened up.
Right.
And that sounds pretty shrewd or whatever, maybe to the consumers out there, but there's in this business model of breweries, like you don't want to be stuck in between a Dangerous Man and like an Indeed. You want to get to a certain size.
You've kind of got like levels, right? Especially when people talk about like the tax breaks or incentives or however you want to look at it, right? Like you've got, once you reach a certain stage, it costs a lot more money to kind of bump up to the next level.
Well,
right?
Well, then there's also like just there's the capital cost, right? If you have to have a centrifuge, you can only buy a unit that's so small. You got to have a social media person. You can only pay, there's a base salary for that.
There's all those business dynamics, and then if you're stuck in between, kind of just like a taproom only model, and then a truly successful distribution focused business, it's just hard to get traction in the marketplace. It's hard to get known. It's hard to be in enough places where people see you and are able to get you enough so that they're interested in your brand and want to buy your beer.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to keep the beer moving fast enough so it's fresh. So getting to a certain size is very helpful to enable a brewery to make sure that they're delivering on the quality end of things and the availability side of things, and being able to innovate and do new things and employ people and employ professionals. So it's all those things. It's the capital cost. It's all that too. And you want to look at your balance sheet and your P&L and everything else. But at the end of the day, if you want to be a brewery that makes and does lots of exciting stuff and has it available in the world, not just in your tap room, you kind of have to get to a certain size. And I think that's something the industry is really facing right now, is that how do these models shake out? I wouldn't want to be in the middle. I'd either want to be in Indeed and kind of where we're going, or I'd want to be like a Dangerous Man and
keep it small, local.
Keep it simple. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, and I'd like your opinion on this too, Jim, what do you think is that size, like, and that, I guess, maybe production level or maybe market share you talked about being kind of stuck in between those two worlds. Where do you think your, and not your specifically, but as a brewer or a cider maker or even, I guess, spirits, where do you think your production level needs to be to reach that kind of next bump?
Well, I think it matters whether you're self-distributing or not. Like, speaking about it strictly from a numbers perspective, you have to have a lot of stuff to be able to do this, right? It's a capital-intensive business.
Mm-hmm.
By my numbers, if you're distributing beer and you're making less than 3,500 barrels a year, you're probably not making any money on distribution. Your taproom subsidizing your distribution business. And I think that's what's great about the taproom, right? Is it allows you to subsidize your distribution business if you want to get to that size. But if you don't, you get stuck in no man's land. I think there's a lot of breweries that just don't, they know what their cost of inputs are, what their cost of goods are, but they're not allocating their utilities or their labor or any of those things to their actual marginal cost of production. And every six pack that goes out the door, they're actually losing money on. And so there's a point at which you have to hit this volume threshold that begs the question, like, am I making money with each incremental unit? Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of places, like to Tom's point, you get stuck in no man's land and you have to be able to kind of push through that to get to a volume where you're actually making incremental margin on every unit you sell. I mean, that's what, like, nobody wants to talk about the businessy side of beer, right? But that's a really important thing.
Well, I think a lot of it too is, in craft beer in particular, it's a very people, labor intensive, both on the production side and the sales side and marketing side and everything. And you hire people, we hired a bunch of people over the years and now mm-hmm. we're 6 years old. And, these people, they want to have comfortable jobs. They don't right. want to have to work their butts off like they did in the beginning. And me as an owner and my partner, Nate, like, we don't want to have to work 120 hours a week like we used to. Mm-hmm. And so it's, again, that's like another kind of thing that's happening in the industry is people who just didn't think about how they're going to get to that point. How do you get insulation from, the ownership to the taproom manager, for example, so that when the taproom manager quits, that you don't end up as the owner, like, having to close the taproom every day for 4 weeks until you get somebody hired. And how do you get people to come and join your organization and stay and want to be there? And so that's kind of another part of, like, the no man's land in between is, like, how do you get to a size where you can afford to pay professionals to mm-hmm. do your work for you, to work and grow the company, to grow the brewery, and also, make it so that as an owner, you can focus on really what you should be focusing on, which is growing the company and looking for new opportunities and making sure that it's a good place to work and making sure that the quality is high from a much broader, perspective, I guess. So,
yeah, is the answer just grind it out to go from that small level to the level that makes sense and know to monitor your sales, your production, your numbers, where if you are making money, if you're working towards making money, at least to keep grinding, or if you're not, know to cut bait and scale back.
Yeah, I think you gotta have a vision. You gotta know where you're trying to go. Ideally, you have a plan. And if the market and your business is changing too fast, you need to rewrite the plan, which is what we did, all along the way. And there was definitely a couple of years where it was heady times and we were just kind of growing like crazy and mm-hmm. not really understanding what we were doing. but eventually regroup and look and see where you're going and make decisions based on really truly where you want to go as a company and what's obtainable. You don't want to be somebody who's going into any business without a plan and a vision for where you're going to go and actually run those numbers. Because if your plan is to become a brewer, to become a brewery, whatever, to have a tap room, that might work out, but there's a good chance it won't because you may not be factoring in the human factor, which is that you might not like brewing beer after 4 or 5 years. It's a lot like being a farmer.
Yeah.
Like, nobody wants to be a farmer these days. Like, if you didn't grow up, nobody, like, maybe a hobby farm and have some goats, but, like, that's home brewing. Like, if you want to actually get up at 4 a.m. and make beer every day, then you're a special person, especially if you're going to take home all the baggage with you if you own the business.
My favorite kind of person, just for the audience.
Yeah, right?
They're my favorite people, too.
But Tom was talking earlier also about having a plan but also being flexible. And I think that if you don't know what you want, this very much is still a lifestyle business. People get into this because they like to do it. If people continue to work in the industry at what is arguably a discount, if you're a sales professional in medical devices, you can make a lot more money than if you're a salesperson in the beer business.
For sure.
Part of the reason you do this is you love it and you love the product and you love the lifestyle and you love the people and all those things. Yeah. So you have to balance that, but you also have to know where you're going. To Tom's point, this has been it's been kind of fun. We were on the heels for 3 years behind you guys.
Yeah.
And it's been fun to watch Tom and Nathan grow their business as kind of Wade and I think about where we're going, because we want to be a regionally distributed craft cidery. That's our plan. And so as the markets change, we've had to change our plans. Like, how do you do that? How do you get there? Do you spray volume out in the market and then try and capture market share? Do you got to kind of go and do that a little bit more slowly? And a big part of that is saying, okay, what's the ethos of this place?
Yeah.
How do we grow this in a way that stays true to that ethos but still be flexible in the market?
And Jim and I have known each other for a while, and it's our conversations have evolved, and that's been the fun part. And there's been people in the industry that I've talked to starting 6 years ago that I've kind of watched, and the conversation hasn't evolved,
mm-hmm.
And it's like, I know Jim is their company's doing well, and they have a vision for where they're going, what they're trying to do. And that's when he talks about the lifestyle thing and liking the people, you know, from an ownership perspective, as a person who myself is kind of growing in the business, that's been fun for me. Is like, yeah, in the beginning, it was like, you know, I loved shoveling everything out of the mash tun and I was running the canning line. That's maybe what we talked about.
Right.
You know, because we were just getting this thing going. But at some point, your conversation needs to evolve where you're looking at different things and planning different things, unless your model is to just literally run the entire business yourself and be there. You know? Yeah. And that can be a great model.
And, I mean, and it can be a great lifestyle if you love doing that. But it's, I mean, it's a, like waking up, making it, planning it, doing the accounting and selling it. Like, that's a lot of work.
Trying to stay healthy and have a relationship.
Yeah, man. That's like those, I mean, I look back on those, you know, those days when I was making it, putting it on a truck, delivering it same day fondly. Like, that was, it was a blast. That was fun, but that was startup land.
And you don't want to do it again.
You can't live in startup land forever. I don't want to do it again. You know? Like, we're trying to hire this person in Wisconsin, and you just gave me some great advice, Tom. He's like, don't tell people you got to actually deliver kegs. Like, cause it's hard on you, man. It's hard on your body. I was in the best shape of my life when I was delivering kegs, but you're physically exhausted at the end of the week. And so, you know, is that a sustainable thing?
Yeah, no, it's a great conversation. I like the idea of having a clear vision and knowing where you're going. And we teased it at the end of last segment that we were going to talk about where you guys are going at Indeed, and that's to Wisconsin. And we got sidetracked and talked about a million other things.
Another breakdown.
So let's tease it again. and after this break, I promise we'll come back and talk about Indeed going into Wisconsin. You're listening to the Minnesota Beercast on AM 1130 and 103.5 FM, brought to you by Free Hope.
We told you about this a little bit earlier. Next Wednesday, the 19th, we're going to be up recording the show in Maple Grove. I do have a time for that. We're going to be starting around 5 o'clock, Schmitty.
All right. I'll be there.
Three squares in Maple Grove. The event that they're doing is it's called Dark Night Darker Beers. Celebrate the longest night of the year featuring, not a good picture, featuring old and new Bell's favorites. It's Wednesday, December 19th, starting at 5 p.m. Up in Maple Grove. That should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, longest night of the year. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. Should be a good time. I'm looking forward to it's always fun to see like what kind of food you can pair with a big dark flight of beer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always fun to drink a big dark flight of beer too.
With bacon. we teased it last segment. I promise we'll deliver this segment. We are back. We've got Jim sitting in with us from Social Cider Works, and we've got Tom from Indeed Brewing. We talked about Indeed expanding into Wisconsin. We teased it last segment and the end of the segment before that. We're actually going to talk about it this segment. Tell me about expanding into Wisconsin, Tom.
Yeah, so since we opened, we've always thought Wisconsin is an awesome state.
I
spent a lot of time there, hunt deer there, lots of friends there, et cetera. A lot of our employees are from there.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most populous state that borders Minnesota, unless you count Ontario, but you know, all those people are in Toronto, which is a long ways away. And but it's a challenging state to sell beer in if you're from out of state and if you're not New Glarus. There's always kind of this question of like, how could we come up with a solution to, you know, be successful in Wisconsin and Minnesota? And Indeed's never been a brewery to run off to multiple states. We're in North Dakota, which is kind of a small market, and we're in Minnesota, and 70% of our beer is sold right in the Twin Cities. So I started to think, well, what if we could open a brewery there? And originally the state of Minnesota said, no, you can't do that.
Why would they say that?
Well, we could open up a production brewery, but they wouldn't let us do a tap room. And they said that because the Minnesota law says that you can have one tap room.
Yeah, but that's Minnesota law.
Yeah, I know, but they said that it didn't matter. And they told all the breweries this over the years, and the breweries believed it, which was too bad. But
I never, listened to their first response. It's their job to say no, right?
Absolutely. And so we went about having a cordial conversation with them with some letter writing and some attorneys. And then we got them to admit that, yeah, you could actually have a tap room there. And there's some nuances to it, but we won't get into it. So basically, about a year ago, we hired a guy in Milwaukee to be our local sales rep. We've been self-distributing beer out there. He has a van in Milwaukee. We have a van in Minneapolis. He would go out and sell Monday and Tuesday. We'd go meet, and like today we actually met in Toma, swap the van, he'd go deliver beer, but not to sell a lot of beer, sell a little bit of it, and introduce ourselves to the market, and mainly in Milwaukee and Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the meantime, we were looking at a way to start up a brewery in Milwaukee because Milwaukee's an awesome town.
Mm-hmm.
They've got some great breweries. They got room for more. It's a town that's poised for growth in general. It's close to Chicago. It's got great bones, great real estate, you know, good opportunities. It's a lot cheaper than Minneapolis, which mm-hmm. is like Minneapolis is off the hook crazy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we're going to be the first, you know, brewery to kind of out of state go into Wisconsin and open up a tap room. It's technically a production brewery, but it's really truly going to be our innovation brewery where we'll be able to brew, you know, over 60 styles of beer a year. It will be able to send that beer out of the tap room and into other markets in Minnesota or Wisconsin. We'll have over 20 employees there within a year. We should be open in June. It's going to be a really cool tap room. It's going to be a little bit like Indeed in Minneapolis. The brewery is going to be in Walker's Point. Actually, Kitty Corner from Milwaukee Brewing Company, which is closing that location
because
they opened up a new one. So it's like they're losing one brewery in the neighborhood and another one's going to pop right up.
Yeah.
So people are excited about that. And I'm pumped. I've been spending a ton of time in Milwaukee. It's a great town for about a year and a half now. And that's our plan.
Doesn't Milwaukee feel like the Twin Cities forgotten triplet?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's really complimentary, actually, yeah. I would say. There's a lot of differences and nuances to it. But, like, it's a super fun town, and like I've been going back and forth basically like 1 week in Minneapolis, 1 week in Milwaukee, and that's kind of the way my schedule's been lately, which is a little hectic, but it's a lot of fun, and I look forward to going to Milwaukee, and after I'm, you know, then I come home to Minneapolis for a little bit, and then I go back and making friends there. I've been out like sailing on the lake, and it's a cool town, and you know, ultimately our strategy though is, yeah, have a great tap room, have the ability to innovate, to do any style of beer we want to, and develop new brands, start them small, grow them big, and then also we think that sort of, if we take our time then with the distribution, we can be successful in Wisconsin as a whole, is what we hope. So
have you received any hate mail from Minnesota consumers? Like you're going to Wisconsin. That's the dark side.
Yeah. I haven't yet. And honestly, I remember in college when finding out that the students from Wisconsin were paying less than me at the University of Minnesota, and even though I was a Minnesota resident, and I remember it being a little bit, you know, about Wisconsin. Right. I haven't met many Minnesotans who don't have some sort of soft spot in their heart, even if a little bit secretly about Wisconsin. I mean, you go to Wisconsin and I'll be honest, you just feel a little bit more free over there.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, maybe it's not all good. Like there's some things in the politics over there that are questionable, but like it's a fun state and they've got a lot of great things going on. And I think it's got a fun culture, and I think the cultures are complementary. I think the rivalry is healthy. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good rivalry. And like I said, half my friends here in the Twin Cities are from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, there's a lot of back and forth. And I think it's a fun thing that I think we can have fun with and enjoy. And I see, like I was telling somebody today, I was trying to convince someone to move to Milwaukee from Colorado. And, you know, I was like, look,
was this a hiring decision, Tom?
No, that wasn't really. I'm saying, don't look at it as moving necessarily just to Milwaukee. Look at it as moving to this region,
yeah,
which is a great region.
Well, and you know? I mean, when you move to Milwaukee, you almost move to Chicago.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, it's so close, and I know native folks from Milwaukee who despise Chicago. So I think that for some of them, they don't really care.
No,
and because they've always had a great, you know, huge city with everything that comes with a city like Chicago available to them.
Mm-hmm.
But as somebody, you know, like myself, born and raised in Minnesota in the Twin Cities, like I always, it's probably not going to come across the right way, but I always think of, you know, the Twin Cities as, you know, they really want to be Chicago, but they're just, we're never going to get there. We're so small.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I feel like a little different about that. I feel like Chicago wants to be New York. And Minneapolis knows it's not going to be, you know. And I think that's what's great about this town. I mean, it's whether you're talking about the you know, we have innovative things happening on the politics side in Minneapolis. We have innovative things happening on the housing policy side. We have innovative things happening in the brewery side. Mm-hmm. Like I think that the fact that we're quote unquote flyover area, most Minnesotans are thinking, great, you keep flying, man, because we got this like really special thing that's here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think. I'm from up here, but I spent a bunch of time on the East Coast after I graduated college, and my family lives down in Florida now, so I've kind of been all over the place. But there's something in the water here, man. Like, people want to come back, and it's because it's a really, the Twin Cities as a region is kind of uniquely different from a Chicago or from a New York or from one of these large metros. It's got all the great stuff of a big metro, but kind of none of the crummy stuff.
I think a lot of it is the people too.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you can tell when you meet somebody from the Midwest versus somebody from the East Coast versus somebody from the West Coast. I mean, it's just people being people and people who are genuine. And I think that's my takeaway from it.
And that's what I love about Milwaukee. I mean, ultimately, we all work 40, 50, 60 hours a week. Like, there's not that much time left to go do all these crazy mm-hmm. things in, like, a place like Chicago. And for me, Minneapolis has always had plenty of it. And honestly, Milwaukee has plenty of it, too. Like, I'm not bored in either city. Mm-hmm. In Chicago, I'm a little overwhelmed. And from a business perspective, like, if I went and started a business in Chicago, like, I'm probably too nice. I'd basically be found in pieces on the street. Well, like, that's pretty much guaranteed. Yeah, so.
That's just going to
yeah.
Chicago.
Yeah, I know. Like, so Milwaukee is a much better fit for me. I was like, all these people, I can actually, they seem nice. I don't think they're going to
have a coupon for that in Chicago.
Yeah, right. No offense, Chicago. Please don't come track me down.
Because there's going to be no Indeed beer ever in Chicago. Yeah, yeah, like,
that's you know, beer in Chicago is a whole nother conversation.
Yeah. Did you see that they have the most breweries of any city in the country?
Yeah. Chicago?
You know, I saw that, yeah.
Really?
Not even sure, like per capita or anything?
Just 162 breweries. They beat Denver.
Holy Honda.
Yeah, it's all happened in the last few years.
That's great. And, good for them.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Chicago's such a big place, though. Like, when you start a brewery in Minneapolis, or in my experience, when we opened Social Bowl, people come from everywhere because you can still drive here. It's not like bad traffic in the Twin Cities is you're 20 minutes late to work.
Yeah.
Bad traffic in Chicago is you don't get there till noon.
Yeah.
And so when you live in a place like Chicago or New York or L.A., one of these like mega metros, you live in a kind of sub-metro, and you don't leave. Like,
it's super dense.
Yeah.
Your address is by neighborhood.
Like, I lived in New York after I graduated college, and going to Brooklyn, like, man, you had to hold a gun to my head. Like, I was not getting on a train to cross the river. I didn't leave the island. That was my rule. And even more than that, like, you know, you live in one neighborhood, and you know all the restaurants and the bars around there, and you kind of stay super localized.
Mm-hmm.
This is a metro that sprawls a little bit. You know, there's some downside to that, but at the same time, when you live in the Twin Cities, you kind of get to experience all the Twin Cities. When you live in Chicago, you know, you're living in your neighborhood.
Yeah, the population there is so much more dense. Mm-hmm. I've got to believe that there is room for many more breweries in a place that's got so much population.
I imagine so.
And you were talking earlier about the different sort of business models and where you want to find yourself. Guy, I can only imagine, you know, the struggles that a Chicago brewery or tap room would face in that decision. Do you want to just be, you know, super serve your local area, or do you want to try to even the logistics of distributing around Chicago has got to be a bit of a nightmare.
We went down to Chicago for CiderCon year before last. It's like, it's pretty much the CBC for cider makers. And we were talking to some guys who had opened a brewery about maybe probably 6 or 8 months before. And they were saying that they distributed about 2,500 barrels out of a van, an E350 van, in 40 blocks.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a lot of liquid in 40 blocks. Like, they're like, if we go to the other side of Chicago, people don't know who we are. They don't care who we are. So local in that market is neighborhood local.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. All right. We will continue this conversation and get some updates on what's going on with Sociable Cider Works coming up in the final segment of this week's Minnesota Beercast presented by FreeHop.
FFAP.
Our final segment of this week's Minnesota Beercast presented by Free House Beer. Reminder, get that iHeartRadio app, download it, subscribe to the Minnesota Beercast so you can get notifications when new episodes are updated. We are on Thursday nights for the foreseeable future through Gopher hockey season. Normally we air on Friday nights at 8 during Gopher hockey because of the preemptions and such. You can find us live on Thursday nights on Twin Cities News Talk.
There you have it.
That's right.
Let's transfer the conversation over to Jim from Social Cider Works. You like that segue? That's pretty great.
that was professional.
Thanks.
It was super transitional.
That's why you guys keep me around. Look forward to the January 12th show with Jeff Merriman. It'll be much better from the Craft Beer Expo.
Oh, that's right, Dan in Mankato.
Yeah.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
You'll enjoy that episode much more.
Wait, how's that going to be much better, man? We're killing it.
Well, no, but the host will be much more professional.
Oh, there
you go. I mean, you guys won't be there. So.
Great time.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, people are going to be calling in saying, hey, where were those guests from last week?
You'd be playing some Stevie Nicks bumper music for that episode. You can count on it.
Enjoy. So we left off talking about Wisconsin. And Jim, you mentioned you guys are kind of eyeing up Wisconsin as well.
Yeah, man, we're not going quite as I guess you guys took some time to leg into it. I said we're 3 or 4 years behind Indeed, and I feel like sometimes Indeed will do something we're like, that's a really good idea, and then we end up doing something really similar at Sociable, and we pride ourselves on being kind of fiercely independent and coming up with like cool and interesting things, and
yeah, but let Tom do all the hard things.
Yeah, well, so then, but I'm like, every now and then it's nice to just be like, yeah, Tom got that right. I'm going to do what he did.
Imitation is the best form.
Yeah, you know what I mean. And no, so
smart.
We are also selling a little bit of product in North Dakota, and interestingly in Canada as well, like just up in Manitoba. And so, but not a lot. Like it's our number's even higher than Tom's. Over 90% of our liquid gets sold in the Twin Cities region. So we are a very urban brand, and we're doing a really good job of teaching people in Greater Minnesota about what we got going on. But mm-hmm. we're also making plans to what happens when we kind of outgrow Minnesota. And the cider category is pretty small. It's about 1% of the beer market. It's actually about 3% of the Twin Cities. We have a really healthy market here. But by any measure, we are a big hunk of that. And so we got to start thinking, if we want to grow this business, if we want to be a regionally distributed cidery, we got to start thinking about what the next markets are.
Nice. So in North Dakota, in Canada, Wisconsin, you guys are moving your product, and you've got some new products to tell us about.
We're not in Wisconsin yet. We're actually
eyeing it up.
Yep, we're in the process of hiring. Our plan is to self distribute Wisconsin. Not that dissimilar to what the Tom and the Indeed boys did.
Okay.
So because we really, you know, we make some weird stuff, and we need to be able to teach people the product. We want to focus on getting some draft placements, get people excited about what we got going on, mm-hmm. And really tell the story. Sociable, you know, we like telling the story, and it's unique enough that I think it needs to be told.
I think we can all agree that Wisconsin's better than Iowa.
Right? Yeah, you know, I don't want to say it out loud. I mean, there's no way I'm going on the record for that. I love going down to Iowa.
Hey, it's a nice area.
Yeah, you know.
You mentioned
you guys have to sell stuff.
You mentioned you're in Manitoba.
Yeah, there's a little wine market in Manitoba in Manitoba there's the municipality buys a product from you, so it's like a warehousing system. Yeah. What do they call it? The government buys it. It's
the government boost.
Yep, exactly. And so they're the distributor. And so if you want to get brought in, you got to convince somebody, the government, to bring you in kind of wholesale.
Yeah, logistically, I mean, was that a difficult task? What inspired you?
It was weirdly not, because because it's a government wholesaler, you the individual accounts can call and bring things in. On a loosey basis, like, hey, I want an LTL, I want a less than a truckload or single pallet or a half pallet of product from this specific producer. And so these folks at a little wine market up there called us, and like, we've heard about you, people have been talking about your product, we really want to get it here. And I was like, well, I don't even know if I got the paperwork to ship stuff across state lines. And they're like, we'll take care of it. And they sent us all the stuff, and we shipped them a half pallet of product, and they put it on the floor and sold it. Cool.
Now you're in the Great White North.
Yeah, so now we're officially international. That's so cool. Our head brewer John was originally our keg delivery guy. It's probably not that dissimilar to Tom's story, in the sense that, you know, you hire people and they grow into jobs and they become and they end up running a department. And John's dad is like one of the most cynical people on the planet. And when it was just me, Wade, and John, he'd come back. We had this like old fire door that was on its side that I'd put up on blocks, and that was our desk. That was where everybody like sat around when we had to like check emails and such. Mm-hmm. And he'd come in and he'd bust our chops and be like, oh, I see you guys are at the global headquarters. And you know, it was always a dump. There's always like empty beer cans. so now we are officially are a global headquarters. So we sent him like a message of us sitting at that table, like, yeah, we sent product to
Canada.
To Canada, man. Eh?
So one of the products that we're here previewing today is Mead for Speed. Is that one going to Canada?
That one's not going to Canada. This one's brand hammer new for us. We started exploring the honey space last year, March of last year.
I like it. It's tasty.
We love it. We think it's weird. We think it's interesting. We've been making sizer style meads for a while, like apples, honey, brewed adjunct, kind of exploring this hybrid space.
Mm-hmm.
And honey's really cool. I mean, it's when you ferment it dry, it doesn't taste like honey anymore. It tastes like the flower that it was pollinated from. And we've been having an absolute blast with it. So we're gonna put it in a 12-ounce can next year.
And when does it launch?
Jan 15th is the launch date. It's this the one that we've made about We've made too many of these this year. They've all been super fun. But the one that we're going with is smells and tastes like honey. It's very simple. It's bubbly.
Really good.
It's pretty dry.
It's really
it's about
delicious.
About 6% alcohol. And yeah, the plan is to try to teach people about, you know, this honey beer category where the honey kind of takes more of a front seat.
Yeah. I mean, I've had my fair share of meads, and this is not, I wouldn't say if you are into mead, I don't know that I would call this your traditional example of what I think most people and most home brewers, most, you know, home mead makers would consider a typical mead. Is that accurate?
Yeah. It's, I mean, a lot of times meads are just, it's all honey. It's very sweet, very sweet, very viscous, typically still. You know, this, we wanted to do what we did for Freewheeler with cider, which was make it a dry, bubbly, kind of like nice tannin background champagne style cider. We wanted to do the same thing with mead, and we did it the same way. We brewed it. It's actually the brewed adjunct that we do to add the tannin in Freewheeler is the same thing we do for Mead for Speed. So it's you could argue that that's not very creative, but we're like, if this works really well with table apples, we think it's going to work really well with honey.
It's delicious. We do a lot of honey stuff indeed in our beers, and this has it's just the taste that lingers is not overwhelming, and I haven't had a sip of it for probably 5 minutes, and I can still just have a nice kind of flavor in my mouth. That's really, really nice, Jim.
How what kind of honey do you guys use for the Mexican honey?
Mexican honey, it's secret.
Secret honey.
It's Mexican orange blossom.
Okay.
Mexican orange blossom honey. It has to come from Mexico.
Yep.
Everybody's tried to sell us stuff from Argentina and California, and we've tried the honeys, and they just don't compare.
Yep.
So it's Mexican orange, which is kind of a bummer because we have to buy all of it once a year, and we buy like 30,000.
God, it costs you a lot of dough, right?
It's tough.
Well, I gave Wade the invoice for honey this week, and he was like, "You jerk!" it's a big capital investment.
It's weird to buy $100,000 of the honey.
Yeah.
So does that just sit in the warehouse then until?
Yeah.
We keep it in the cooler, and then we have to heat it up to kind of liquefy it again a bit.
Yeah.
It's a challenge, but the Mexican honey, we're making Mexican honey year round now. We're going to launch a beer here this spring, Mexican Honey Light.
Ooh,
Mexican Honey Light.
I want in on that for
it's
sure.
Good. It's good, like 5%, and it's got a lot of the kind of aspects of Mexican honey, but
but light. Is it LIT or LIGHT?
We can't do LIT. We get sued for that. LIGHT.
How about LYTE?
Launching into Wisconsin, you're going to do all the beers LIT.
That's how they spell it in Wisconsin. They legit believe that's how it's spelled.
but I mean, I think the tough thing about the honey, like Honeyland. And if you're adding honey to a beer, that's not that out of the realm of American craft beer innovation. But, you know, I think that when you're making a honey product, if you're trying to make mead, a lot of people just don't know what it is. And so, you know, we're selling this under the Sociable Ciderworks label. The product name is Mead for Speed, and we're just calling it what it is, which is sparkling honey. It's
delicious.
I think it's going to be a great way to teach people about, you know, what can be done in this kind of realm.
And when is that going to be available?
Jan 15th, it goes live. Start looking for it at your local liquor stores. If you don't see it, ask for it, and you know, we'll make sure that our distributor sales reps are doing their job.
There you have it.
I will be picking some up for sure. That was really tasty.
All right. Thanks gentlemen, for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Great show, guys. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your beers and your stories with us. We appreciate it. Again, next Wednesday, the 19th, we're recording at Mip and Maple Grove. Join us. We'll start around 5 o'clock for Darkest Night, Darkest Beers.
Should be
a lot of fun.
Thanks a lot. See you.
Cheers.
This little refrain should help me explain. As a matter of fact, I like beer.